Today's reading is from Genesis. Once, Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream that I've dreamed. There we were, binding sheaves in the field. Suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, and your sheaves gathered around it and bowed down to my sheaf." His brothers said to him, "Are you indeed to reign over us? Are you indeed to have dominion over us?" So they hated him even more because of his dream and his words. He had another dream, and he told it to his brothers, saying, "Look, I have another dream. The sun, the moon, and 11 stars were bowing down to me." But when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, "What kind of dream is this that you have had? Shall we indeed come, I, your mother, and your brothers, and bow down to the ground before you?" So his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in his mind. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the long robe with the sleeves that he wore, and they took him and they threw him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead with their camels carrying gum, balm, and resin on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brother, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him, for he's our brother and our own flesh." And his brothers agreed. When some Midianite traders passed by, they drew Joseph up, lifting him out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And then they took Joseph to Egypt. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
So before I invite our guest preacher up here today, we want to remind you about our sermon series that will be starting on next week. It is off of Rob's new book, The Passion Play. So we invite you to invite all of your friends and coworkers and people in your household that need Jesus. Invite them to come out because we had a goal of reaching 2020 in. There you go. So let us just take a second and show our video for our next sermon series.
When you live in a town that has kept a once-a-decade tradition for 386 years, you learn a lot about the power of ritual. Hello, I'm Rob Fuquay, and it's my privilege to be your guide in this study of Jesus' passion from the perspective of the Oberammergau Passion Play. Once a decade, the people of Oberammergau step away from being farmers and doctors and teachers and waiters and waitresses to become actors and actresses in the greatest story ever told. You'll not only gain an appreciation for this historic play, you'll also take away new meaning for the story of Jesus' passion and the hope and inspiration this story brings to our lives today.
So it's my honor today to introduce my friend, the Reverend Dr. Rudy Rasmus, who's the co-pastor of St. John's Downtown United Methodist Church in Houston, Texas. And in 1992, he and his wife started St. John's, and there were 9 people there. Somebody say nine. Nine. Started 9 people there and grew to be one of the largest United Methodist churches in the nation. Because of that, 8 years ago, the New Jersey Conference paid for myself and 2 other individuals to go down and see what he and his wife were doing. And we were absolutely floored. They gave us the tour of all of the work they were doing. They showed us the transitional housing for people who were homeless. And on the side of the building, there were the last names of Knowles and Roland. You can look up the last names. All my single ladies, you should be able to look at that. Yeah. And so we were just full. I mean, they were doing some phenomenal work in the Houston area. But I think what we all left there, we were so impacted by, was not only the work that they were doing, but the community that they had created there over the last several years. On Sunday morning, we got together and we gathered to worship, and we noticed that literally in their service, everyone from every walk of life that you can think of was gathered there in this one space of worship. There were the people there who were the CEOs, who were people who were homeless, and everything in between. And it was a beautiful sight to see. And it wasn't just people under the same building, but literally people on the same row that came from all different walks of life. And now I know why. Because the last words that Pastor Rudy Rasmus said to that congregation and said to us at the end of the service, he said, "God loves you, and there's nothing you can do about it." So won't you help me welcome the Reverend Dr. Rudy Rasmus as our guest preacher today. Bless you, Lord. Bless you, Lord.
Monday morning, August 14th, 2017. I went to my one of my favorite coffee shops. I own a coffee shop, but this is my favorite besides my own, all right? I went to my favorite coffee shop, Catalina Coffee in Houston, and that morning sat down and began to contemplate what it would be like to end my life. My therapist ultimately called that a suicidal ideation, but it was real for me. And in that moment, I was thinking, you know, I don't think I want to be here anymore. I had crossed a moment where life and meaning parted. You know, in that moment, I couldn't remember really. The work that Juanita and I had been doing for 26 years to that point, couldn't think about it. Couldn't think about the 100 plus million we'd raised for some significant causes. Couldn't think about the 30 million we had raised to develop housing for previously homeless people. I couldn't think about the 500 meals we'd served homeless men and women for 20 plus years. I couldn't remember any of that in that moment. All I could think about was the fact that in a few months from that moment, we were going to lose everything, all of the housing, the church campuses, and the snowball from that moment. I could visualize in my mind, and all I could see was this was over. It wasn't even really losing the stuff that got me that day. What really got me that day was the shame I was experiencing as a result of what I perceived in that moment as failure. I made three calls that morning. I knew I was in trouble. I knew I was close to what felt like the end for me. I made one call to a good friend. This good friend had survived just all sorts of trauma. And he and I have been buddies for a long time and really traveled the world. And in that travel, we shared our common traumas. So I knew that if I could call one person who could tell me how to basically navigate this moment, he would be able to do so. So I called him. What he did was he asked me, did I talk to Juanita? You know, he knows me well. And he knows she has a lot more sense than I do, all right? And I said, no, I hadn't. And he said, won't you call her? And I did. I called Juanita, my wife. And she knows me better than anyone. I called her, and we talked. Of course, she prayed, and she's a contemplative. She prays. And she told me, she said, you know, you might want to call Sandra. Sandra's my therapist. I've seen Sandra for about 10 years. I've been in therapy for 30, which qualifies me, right? Yeah, I'm qualified, man. And I went to see Sandra. And Sandra, as I sat down, Sandra began to talk to me about me. See, in 10 years, she knew me. She knew that I had successfully run from failure my whole life. It's probably why I wear Chucks. They make it easy for me to escape failure. She said, you know, Rudy, you have successfully escaped failure, run from failure your whole life. I have always, my entire life, felt like failure was always snapping at my heels. From my earliest remembrance, I could think of it's going to apprehend me. So I have always been on the run. She said, why don't you consider a perspective change? She said, you've been running from something, which requires you to look behind you for many years. She said, why don't you change your perspective and put something out in front of you? Why don't you take on a new dream? And my Jewish therapist told me, she said, Rudy, why don't you try Jesus? True enough, Jesus had made a significant mark on my life. I would say the reason I'm still alive is because of Jesus. Had I not made that encounter 30 years ago, I would not be here today based on the path that I was on at that point. And I was on that path for a long time. You know, one thing I remember from that moment, and this was a recent moment, this is not a long time ago, this was a couple of years ago. What I remember in that moment was the 8-year-old Rudy. The 8-year-old Rudy who always dreamed, who never failed to dream. As a matter of fact, with my daddy's glasses on, I could see well, all right? I'm telling you. And that Rudy always saw a different world, a place, a big space. I've always been vertically challenged, which is why I have on my giraffe Chucks today, all right? It's just... But that Rudy always dreamed of a world with one restroom and not two, with one marked for colors only. That Rudy dreamed about a world where he didn't have to enter through back doors, didn't have to be concerned for his safety, didn't have to worry about which restroom door he entered, making sure he didn't walk through accidentally that one that marked for whites only. You know that Rudy dreamed about being able to sit anywhere, in any place, on any bus, at any time. And what I realized in that moment is that Rudy, who dreamed all of the time, forgot what it meant to dream. I don't know if you've ever experienced discontentment, but one thing I realized that discontentment and longing are two sacred signals that inform us that either we can begin to embrace the bright future in front of us, or we can begin to default to the way it has always been. You see, there's comfort in the way it's always been, but whenever we embrace the potential of a bright future, we are challenging the longing that will pay a visit on our souls. I know this for a fact because I've been in some dark places in my life. And it says in that place, that dark place where discontentment ultimately brings me to the crossroads, and that crossroads is a decision as to whether or not I'm going to move forward or I'll stay stuck. You know, I think about being stuck, and if anybody has ever been stuck in this room before, you know that stuck is a decision. We find ourselves in a place where we can't move. It's only because we have in essence moved away from the volition of being able to make the decision for ourselves. And in this moment, I began to understand what dreaming really meant. But see, I began to cultivate an environment of dreaming again. And my wife will tell you, I dream a lot. I have always dreamed a lot. Everything that we have taken on in our lives, and I'm blessed with Juanita, because Juanita has been on this ride with me this entire time. As a matter of fact, we are going to be celebrating 35 years next week. All right? Yeah. Give that woman an award. I ain't lying, all right? Because she has been on a ride with a fool. But this definition that grabs me is a series of thoughts not under the command of reason. Now think about not being under the command of reason, I realize that it's reason that often keeps us from taking the step. It's reason that keeps us from venturing out into the unknown. It's reason that ultimately keeps us bound in our current reality. But in that moment when we can move beyond reason, it's then we can get free. You see, Joseph was free. He was free to manifest the miraculous. That's what was happening when he began to speak to his brothers. He was manifesting the miraculous. They knew who he was, but Joseph also knew who he was, and as he spoke to his brothers, he was literally manifesting the miraculous. We all have the power to manifest the miraculous in our lives. You know, I was having a conversation with my then 85-year-old mother, who Juanita and I moved next door to a couple of years ago. As a matter of fact, we moved next door to her. She's 88 years old now. When we moved next door to her, she told her friend, who told me, that my mom had said, "Well, it's okay to call me Little Rudy. It's okay that Little Rudy is moving next door as long as he don't visit too much." All right? That's my mama. All right. Can you feel the warmth and the closeness in that moment? As long as he don't visit too much. But she's an interesting woman, and so much so she grew up on a farm, and as a result of growing up on a farm, my mom had never ridden a bicycle. So I said, "Mom, you've never ridden a bicycle?" She said, No, baby, I've never ridden a bicycle." So I went and bought her a bicycle. 85 years old, I bought her a bicycle, and that's her on a bicycle. Mama at 85. And look at the joy in her expression as she manifests the miraculous. Two bad knees on that bicycle. A long life now, and a long life with my pops was, I mean, that's a long life. But manifesting the miraculous in that moment because she knows how to grab the moment. She's still alive because she understands that the future is every day in front of her. She's still alive right now because if you ask her, "Mildred, what are you doing today?" All right, she's going to tell you what she is doing today because she has a goal in front of her every day, and a goal is just a dream with a deadline, right? Every day she does. Fascinating woman. And you too have the power to manifest the miraculous just like Joseph did. You know, think about Joseph and you know, think about Joseph's life. Joseph was the 11th son of Jacob. The 11th son of Jacob with his second wife, Rachel, 10 other kids in the house with three other wives, with one wife and two slaves. So here Joseph is, the 11th child in this house. Everybody's still in the same house, y'all. Can you imagine the dysfunction, the chaos in that house? But at the same time, Joseph had the miracle, had manifested the miracle, the miraculous in him to the point where he could have a dream that showed him in charge. You know, he began to tell that dream with boldness to his brothers, and in that moment, that's when his trouble really began. He began to inform his brothers the miracle that was manifesting in his life. He said, "This is what I dreamed," and then he told them a second dream. And both of those dreams showed Joseph in charge, and his brothers being subservient to him, and of course they didn't like that. As a matter of fact, they didn't like it so much they plotted to kill him. And you know, when we think about our own dreams, how often do we allow the external critics to determine where and how we live, what we do? You know, one thing I have defied is the external critics. You can tell by my beard, I don't care about external critics, right? But the internal critic, That's the one. That's the one that has informed me my entire life, what I can't do, where I can't go, what I can't be, what door I can't walk through, how far I won't go, what I'll never be able to achieve. The internal critic. The one said, you're just like. The one that says, Rudy, you're okay. But I was at coffee the other day with a good friend, Jackie, and Jackie is an amazing woman. Jackie was telling me at coffee that she just got a new therapist. She said, Rudy, I've got a new therapist, and my sessions are $750 a piece, a session. I'm thinking, ooh. That's some kind of therapy. $750 a session. I said, Jackie, for $50, I can do that for you, all right? I mean, come on, man. She said, but Rudy, $750 a session, all right, they are reminding me how fabulous I am. She said, Rudy, I'm going to save you $750 today. Do you know you are fabulous? St. Luke's, I'm going to save you $750 today. That's right. You are fabulous. And just in case you've never heard anyone say you are fabulous, I'm going to ask you to step outside of your comfort, all right, zone, just for a moment. You know, I know white folk don't do this at church, all right, but I want you to talk to each other just for a moment. Look at the person sitting next to you and say, you are fabulous. All right, there you go. You are fabulous. You are fabulous. You are fabulous. You are fabulous. I heard somebody say, I am? All right, just. Yes, you are. But doesn't it feel good to know that you are fabulous? Yeah. Jackie paid someone $750 to remind her that she's fabulous. But guess what? What I'm going to encourage you to do is tonight before you go to bed and in the morning before you, when you wake up, look in the mirror and say, you are fabulous. And with the 750 that you saved, go do something for yourself. You know, Joseph was fabulous. And even though he had been dropped and dumped and dismissed and discarded and kicked to the curb by his kinfolk, and you know the most challenging place for a dream to emerge out of is at the house with your kinfolk. And it's not because they don't necessarily love you, and sometimes they don't. But it's really because it's more comfortable to control the people around us than it is to release them and set them free. Yeah. It's one of the hardest things I do as a parent. Release my kids and set them free. And they're 31 and 32 years old now, and I still want to hold on to them. I have to remind myself often that in order for them to experience their fabulousness, they're going to have to go out and experience and try and fail and succeed. Try again and fail and succeed. And I forgot that cycle. I did that morning. And here we are looking at Joseph's life and knowing that at 30 years old, he became the governor of Egypt and a famine had struck the land. And in that moment here he was looking at his brothers, the same ones that had dumped him into the pit, looking for food. He's over, guess what? Food. kind of seems like that dream began to become a reality. You know why that dream became a reality for Joseph? Because he never stopped dreaming it. Remember, he dropped him in the pit. He was still dreaming. Took him out of the pit and took him to the palace, and he served the king, and he was still dreaming. In the palace, he got into a little mishap with the king's wife, ended up in prison, and in prison, he was still dreaming. Got out of prison, still dreaming, got sent basically to the penthouse. Still dreaming in the penthouse. In that place became the governor. And that's when we realize that dreaming requires courage. You know, courage is not the absence of fear, but courage is knowing that there is something more important than the thing we fear the most. I understand fear. Anybody besides me know fear? Yeah. I allowed fear to literally hold me captive for 10 years. I didn't get on an airplane for 10 years. 1989 and 1999. I got off a flight in 1989, didn't get on another flight till 1999. During that time, I was literally paralyzed by fear. I have a travel anxiety. For a guy that goes 100,000 plus miles a year, I still have the travel anxiety. But I realized there's something more important than my fear, and that is going and being and experiencing. Had I not gotten on a plane, I wouldn't be here with you. And in the midst of this experience, I have an encounter with fabulousness. You see, I'm thinking about this courage that it took Joseph to move forward. And there he was standing and looking at his family in that moment. We know that Joseph could have done a lot of things. One thing, he could have denied his family food, but he didn't. Well, what he did say was, hey, whatever you did to me, you did it. I mean, you might have done it for evil, but God, the Creator, had a plan for my life, not to harm me, but to prosper. Give me hope and a future. I think about where we are right now and how in this time where the news cycle is faster than it's ever been before, how we can hear tragedy one day and literally have moved on before the end of the day from that tragedy, which is why it's going to take some courage to change the world that we are part of. So when Pastor Rob asked me to come and speak at St. Luke, I'm thinking, whew. What am I going to say to a bunch of privileged white folk who don't necessarily have to dream? You can just go do. Right? You have resources and access and privilege. And then it dawned on me. You know, Rudy, you have spoken in more places one time than any other speaker you know. Because you're not afraid to not be invited back if you're sharing your truth. Amen. So here's the deal. The individual dream, we got that, right? You are fabulous. Say, I am fabulous. Yes. All right. But how about we are fabulous? Yeah. And I think that's where the opportunity lies for St. Luke's. You know, my wife and I live in Indianapolis now. We're here about a week, a month. We have grandbabies here. Well, we also have a daughter and a son-in-law here. But. I forget them sometimes. But we do have. And I like this town. think it's relatively polarized. But it's a good town. And great people. You are phenomenal people. So here's a dream. Next time I come to Indy in March, I'm gonna start stopping by. I'm doing research. And this is what I'm gonna ask you to do. Invite the other to meet you at church. Whoever the other is. And then keep inviting until the other meets you. And then we can begin to experience what I think Dr. King was talking about in 1963. 1963, he was getting ready for the March on Washington, big march. And at that march, he was preparing a message that was different from the message that he had been preaching all over the country. He'd been talking about a dream, right? But at this particular time, his friend, Dr. Wyatt T. Walker, good friend, started telling him, Martin, stop, you know, you've been talking about that dream all over the country. People want to hear something new. This is your moment, Martin. You are going to be on a national, on a global stage. And this is your moment to tell the people something new. So Martin wrote a new message for that day. And there they were at on the mall. Mahalia Jackson, who was there with the flower, a big flower. You can't miss that flower. You see that flower? You can't miss that flower. There she was. That big flower. She had just got through singing, I've been buked and I've been scorned. She gets up, she sits down, actually. Martin gets up and starts preaching this new message that he had written. Now if you look closely at Mahalia Jackson's expression, she is looking at him like, what in the hell are you talking about, man? Like, she got a, like, so she literally raises up out of her seat and says, Martin, tell him about the dream. And without a moment's hesitation, Martin starts saying, I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream. And in that moment, the crowd like, because what we really needed was a dream in that moment. We didn't need another fancy message. We needed to know that collectively we could begin to see a new world. And that's what you can do here. You see, I have a dream for St. Luke. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all people are created equal. As you can tell, that August 14th, 2017, I didn't die. I can attribute that to several things. One, this commitment I made to Jesus. Two, commitment I made to my family. Three, commitment I made to myself to see this all the way out. Don't stop dreaming, y'all. God bless you.